Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Middays with Susie Larson. It's only just a matter of... Welcome to Middays. I'm Susie Larson. So honored to have you listening today. I am here every day, hopefully to bring you conversations that inspire you in your faith walk, deepen your understanding of God's Word, and that heighten your awareness of God's very real presence in your life. Well, every month we have Dr. Troy Spurl on the show. He's CEO and founder of Synapse Center for Health and Healing, located in Eagan, Minnesota. And I know he's one of your favorites because we get emails. And in fact, I just heard a voicemail the other day saying, can you get him on more than once a month? But I would love that. But he does have a day job, I'm just saying. So we so appreciate that he gives us the time he does every month to answer your questions. We'll get him on in a minute. I want you to know the phone lines are open. You can either text or call with your questions on health and the healing process. Also, I got an announcement quickly, but first let me give you that number, 877-933-2484. Again, you can text or call. And if you're too shy to get on the air, just call anonymously or give Carissa your message and we'll look at it in the chat box and I'll relay it to Dr. Troy that way. 877-933-2484. Or you can email middays@myfaithradio.com. I want you to know about an online course. It's free. It's called Navigating Grief with Humor. We ran this one other time and I think over 1,000 people took part and just loved it. So Faith Radio, we're partnering together with our university across the street, University of Northwestern St. Paul. It's a free online course. Again, it's called Navigating Grief with Humor. You can register online. Find the information at myfaithradio.com. A quick caveat regarding Dr. Troy. He's not here to diagnose over the air, but he's answering some basic health and healing questions. So I want you to know that. Always consult your doctor. He's, again, doing us a great favor by being here. Let me tell you about him. We'll get him on the show. Dr. Troy Spurl is CEO and founder of Synapse Center for Health and Healing, again, located in Eagan. He loves God, he loves his family, and he's very passionate about the health and healing process. Dr. Troy, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Always good to have you. And you know this, I can't even count how many times you've been on the show, but we love to start by talking scripture. I wonder if you have a verse on your mind today.
I do. Psalm 77:11-14, I will remember the deeds of the Lord. Yes, I'll remember your miracles of long ago. I will consider all your works and meditate on your mighty deeds. Your ways, God, are holy. What God is as great as our God? Mm-hmm. You are the God who performs miracles. You display your power among the people.
Wow, I love that. Can you say a word about it?
Well, today I wanted to talk a little bit about memories and pain, two different scenarios. And I feel like there's so much we can do to help keep our memories. And we're supposed to keep our memories. We're supposed to be focused on God. And when we lose our memory, it's just another way we can become apart from God. And yeah. So,
and even less of who we are.
Less
you
of
know
who
what I
we
mean?
Are. We start to lose our reality. And mm-hmm. so there's a lot of things that start to happen early on that that start to rob us of our memory. And memories are basically, it's who we are. It's our foundation. It tells our story. And so whether it's a good memory or a bad memory, it's important that we remember it, and it helps us actually connect to God. It helps us work through things. It helps us, helps tell our story. It helps tell our testimony. If we can't recall or remember some key things, then it influences and impacts how we relate to each other as Christians and how we relate to the world. And so memories are very, very much a big part of that. And then pain, people who deal with chronic pain, whether it be physical pain, emotional pain, just the pain of life, we start to see a chronicity of memory loss or a chronicity of depression, depressed thought or depressed brain function. So so pain becomes also a part of that conversation. And when we look at just in the health world, what people generally come in for, pain is the number one cause. That's the number one reason why people will go see a doctor is pain, whether it be kidney pain, back pain, headaches, whatever it is, that's one of the number one causes. And in the elderly, the fastest growing disorder is Alzheimer's and dementia. And so that is a memory condition that we now know you can start to work on things early on in life to help prevent that. So I hope to share some of that today.
Wow. Excuse me. I thought it was interesting when you let me know that, you know, our conversation starters would be on pain and memory. I didn't know that they would be connected, but of course they would be. If you have chronic pain, it will affect your brain function. Excuse me. You know, I have several questions around memory. One is, you know, ways that we can keep our memory sharp, but also the idea of suppressed memory. I mean, there's times where you could have a snapshot of something and you're not sure why, but there's because it's connected to a very deep trauma that you're in coping, you've kind of stuffed down. But then there's just the idea of memory loss. I mean, for me with Lyme, as a young 20-something, it wiped out my short-term memory. And doctor said, that happens. And I'm like, not today. And so I started to memorize scripture, and I just kept declaring over my life,
yes,
I will see the goodness of the Lord, and I will recover my memory. And I marvel at how many people in their 30s and 40s going, I'm getting old, I can't remember stuff anymore. And that's your spoken word. I'm saying a lot here, but what you say over yourself even, I think, makes a big deal, makes a big difference.
Absolutely. Yeah, you have to guard your thoughts. You have to be very, very careful about what you're saying to others and what you're saying to yourself. And the reality is we have a saying at the clinic, don't let age be your cage. And that is true for people in their 70s and true for people in their 30s. And that's one of my big pet peeves. If I hear a 30-year-old say, I'm getting old and I'm starting to go through these things, then I'm going to get on my soapbox right away, and they're going to hear a conversation they probably weren't expecting. So that's I want people to stop saying that and saying it out loud in just subtle things. Even if it's a joke or something like that, it can lead to the self-condemnation. It can lead to a lot of the challenges that then require a lot more work and effort to actually correct.
You know, maybe it's another conversation for another day, but I got to say, you know, I want to be careful. I'm not saying this is a name it, claim it thing, but I've studied the brain, and your physiology does respond to the words you say and the thoughts you think. And I learned that early on. So I started to declare, I have a brilliant mind. I would say that. I can recall things. I can learn what I need to learn and know what I need to know. And this is when I couldn't remember anything. And when people start, when they compliment me on my memory now, they don't even know what they're saying. I mean, they don't know what a big deal it is to me, because it's land gained and it's a victory won. So let's just start here. What are some things other than, you know, saying I can't remember anything, what are some other things that are a detriment to your memory, no matter if you're 30, 40s or 60s, 70s?
Well, I'll go through a little list here. So the top nine things that can start to influence our memory are, number one, side effects of medication. So I want people to hear that. Not that medications are bad, but we oftentimes forget to look at the list of side effects, and memory loss is common with many of them. So that generally hits the top of the list for a lot of people these days. Minor head trauma or injuries, and head trauma also includes infections like Lyme, like mold or SIRS. Bacterial infections, we can get anything that affects or inflames our brain can cause memory loss. Emotional disorders or even significant stress, chronic stress, can start to deplete how we are able to remember things. And so, and remember, stress is not just mental stress or life stress. It could be mental, physical, or chemical. So any type of imbalance that's stressful to the brain can induce memory loss. We need two things to have memory be laid down permanently. We need good deep sleep, because that's when your memory goes from short-term into our long-term banks. Without sleep, then we end up not remembering things as efficiently. And so sleep disorders can start to trigger memory loss. Alcoholism is another one. Anything that where you're consuming excess amounts of alcohol or inhaling things that are not innately part of us can also induce memory loss. Vitamin B12 deficiency can be a major contributor to memory loss, and that's a big one. And we see B12 deficiency in a lot of people with stomach acid imbalances. And stomach acid imbalances occur because of lack of sleep or a lot of stress or poor diet. So it's a slower, long-term cause of memory loss, but B12 is very, very important. Your thyroid is also very important for memory loss, so especially women who have hormone imbalances with estrogen, and they get into hypothyroid states, they can also start to develop memory challenges. And so making sure you're staying on top of your thyroid health is very important. And for thyroid health, iodine is one of the key ingredients, and making sure that your zinc levels and your selenium levels are good. And so those are key nutrients to really helping the thyroid out. And making sure your estrogen is nice and in balance. High estrogen or environmental estrogens can throw off the thyroid. inflammation again in the body as well as the brain can affect memory, as can blood sugar imbalances. And in fact, there years ago they used to call Alzheimer's, I almost forgot what the name was.
Yeah.
They used to call Alzheimer's type 3 diabetes or diabetes of the brain, because they found so many people with memory issues, Alzheimer's and dementia, had blood sugar regulation problems in the brain. We now know there's over 5 different causes of the types of Alzheimer's, and there's 37 different triggers that we can see within those 5 groupings. And the last one is more of an accumulation of environmental toxins, because the immune system barrier system is broken down. So there are certain things that we need. Our immune system protects us from the outside world quite a bit. And if we get depleted in certain key proteins, or the proteins called metallothionine proteins, and they're zinc dependent, histidine dependent, and cysteine dependent. And if we get deficient in any of those things, then it can start to weaken our blood-brain barrier. And we start, even in our 30s or 40s, we can start to see declines there that are more related to the barrier system breakdown. But blood sugar is by far the most common. And then lack of brain exercises. We know that if you don't use it, you lose it. If you don't exercise a muscle, it starts to atrophy. So the same thing is true for our brain. So my favorite study, one of my favorite studies, this is quite an older study now, but it was the 99-year nun study, and they basically looked at the nuns who developed Alzheimer's and those who didn't. And the ones who did the best were the ones who stayed socially active. They spoke with the other, their community. They were at gatherings. And then the ones who had the highest level of antioxidants, which is an immune system protectant. So the nuns that actually were socially active, who exercised their brain, whether it was talking, playing cards, reading, speaking, they were just stimulating their brain constantly with good stimuli, and the ones that fed their immune system.
Mm, wow. It's just amazing when you think about it. It goes back to, I think it was last month when you were on, we were talking about plugging the holes. It goes back to clean air, clean water, deep sleep, a clean diet. I mean, truly, there are things you can do if you're listening and you're in your 30s and 40s right now where you clean some things up that helps build you up, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And it's the basics are really important. We can't skip over them because that's where we start to get the barriers broken down, is by losing those basics. And funny enough, our current lifestyle really does not serve those basics very well at all.
And even how we manage stress, so important. Yes. Phone lines are open, 877-933-2484. You can text or call. You can also try to email middays@myfaithradio.com. When we come back, we'll say a word about pain, what we should know about pain. Is it always good just to treat the pain, or do you want to get to the bottom of why you feel pain? I think I know what Dr. Troy would say about that. Pick me. Anyway, we'll be back in a minute. Thanks for tuning in to Middays. I'm Susie Larson, and every month we get to have our friend Dr. Troy Sproul on the show to talk about health and the healing process. Phone lines are open. You're quiet today. We've got some texts coming in, but normally the phone lines just blow up. So don't be shy. We want to hear from you. 877-933-2484. Again, if you're shy, don't be afraid. Just call, and you can give our phone screener your question, your comment, and we'll feed it through. Or you can call and be on anonymously. You can also text 877-933-2484. Dr. Troy, this listener says, first of all, love the show. Love when Dr. Troy is on. Wondering if he's ever heard of and or treated someone with burning mouth syndrome. Would he share some helpful success treatments? Thank you.
Yes, and we were just laughing because my wife and I were just talking about this last night. And
I teased, how exciting is that?
Yeah, we have a very exciting life. but we do see this quite often. There's a couple different causes, and some people detect more of a metallic taste. Some people detect more of the burning taste. And when you are actively detoxifying, you can actually get that that sensation. The breath can actually smell like cigar or cigarette smoke
wow.
in a non-smoker.
Wow.
for the burning mouth syndrome. So if someone else can detect there's a smell, then that is from that detox reaction. If they can't, if no one can detect a smell, but you feel the burning, then that is generally a sign of either detox or a particular system's being overloaded. The number one system that we're usually referencing is the bile system through the liver. So the number one cause, so I'll go through a short list of some of the things you can do. Number one, B12 deficiency can cause that all by itself. Wow. Number two, bile duct dysfunction, which we generally see means something is causing the liver to be overwhelmed. Eating too many carbohydrates can do that. Also, choline deficiency from eggs, and some people who have egg allergies don't absorb the choline as efficiently. And so they can become deficient in choline, and that can lead to the burning mouth, burning tongue syndrome. Then also, if you're doing a detox, all the toxins get taken to the liver. It can overload the liver, and that can set off as well. Undiagnosed acid reflux can also set that off and contribute to it. And the last thing is really when people have bile duct dysfunction secondary to diet, overeating, fried food, fatty food, that can set it off as well. So the first thing is to see if someone else can detect a smell, a cigarette or a smoke smell, and or if try and differentiate between a metallic taste versus a smoky, burnt taste.
Mm, interesting. Yep. I just had an idea. What if we went into the holidays starting now and we lowered our carbs, lowered our sugars, ate as clean as we could? Then you can still enjoy your holidays, but it's almost like people toss it out the window. Well, we're on the holidays, you know, cookies for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And you start the new year feeling so toxic, and you are toxic. But I feel like if you exercise some restraint and go after this going, I'm going to end this year with a bang. I'm still going to enjoy a few treats, right? I don't know. Just an idea.
Yes. All right. I forgot one. Sorry, Susie.
Go.
There's a genetic component too, hemochromatosis. So too much iron in the liver.
Sorry, just being snarky.
Yeah, of course.
Hemochromatosis.
I almost forgot hemochromatosis.
Yes.
So, which is too much circulating iron or ferritin in the blood, or if you have too much of a metal circulating in the blood because you're not clearing it out. So it can be a genetic hemochromatosis or a buildup of copper or iron or lead, one of the more heavier metals.
Would you say a careful detoxification process needs to happen in those? I mean, I think some people sometimes go towards detoxes, like throwing caution to the wind, like anything goes. But I think that your body can only handle so much.
Yeah, you got to pay attention to your body. The first level of that you need to have is awareness. Just pay attention to what's working for your body and what's not. If you can't discern what's happening with the body, meaning is this I've had a bad reaction. Is this a good bad reaction or is this just a bad reaction? Then that's when you go to the experts to help out or someone who's gone through the same process. Slow and steady generally wins the race. That's why we like more of a lifestyle change for the most part. And that works really well. Hemochromatosis, that's genetic. So the only thing you can do is bloodletting for that. Like phlebotomy, you go and donate the blood. Susie's eyes are really wide open right now. I'm not sure.
I thought you're kidding.
No.
So they draw blood from you?
They draw blood from you to thin your blood. It gets too thick because your body is not genetically gifted at taking the iron out.
Interesting. Yep. Wow. Didn't they use leeches for that?
They still do, actually, in some hospitals, funny enough.
Wow. Education.
I've heard that.
Wow. Yeah. All right. Debbie from Colorado called in, didn't want to be on the air. Can you speak to lifestyle changes that can help to lower blood pressure? What do you say?
Yes. So love this question because there are so many different types of influences when it comes to blood pressure. Number one is stress. So if stress is high, that will increase blood pressure. Number two is physical activity. So we want to be moving. And although when you're moving, blood pressure goes up, the exercise, whether it's just 20 minutes walking a day or a full-blown workout, moving throughout the day is one of the best things you can do for blood pressure. Very much age and heart appropriate. So the older you are, the more you want to start slowly. But it's all about the consistency. Our blood vessels are basically muscles, and so they have to be retrained. So you start very slowly, and you just move. Movement helps with blood pressure. Now, some of the things that can get in the way of blood pressure are kidney disorders, where you're not drinking enough, or the kidneys aren't they're a little more damaged. People with methylation or don't convert their B vitamins as efficiently have problems with kidneys. Some people who have hidden infections, kidney or yeast infections, fungal infections, produce acids. All acids are, most are pulled through the kidneys. So drinking lots of water also helps with blood pressure. And there are ways to reset it. So they used to go to just the reduce your salt intake, but we now know there are actually some therapies out there where we have people drink salt water to lower their blood pressure. So it's all about how your kidneys are managing the acids and the electrolytes in your body.
Isn't there a place and time when someone's got low blood pressure that they want to bring up? Or did I just miss something?
No, you can do that too. Yeah. So with low blood pressure, you can actually increase some of the sodium potassium. Mm-hmm. So monitor your sodium potassium. And if you're on a diuretic for blood pressure, you just have to be very, very sensitive to the fact that that plays into it as far as how much salt and potassium you're taking in. There are also some other hormones, sugar affects insulin, insulin affects cortisol, and antidiuretic hormone. And so sometimes our diet, as far as we just have to make sure our blood sugar and our insulin is being managed. Insulin doesn't get tested as much as blood sugar. So fasting insulin, we like to see around 6.5 when you have high blood pressure. And most people are shocked to find theirs are much higher than that. Even if their blood sugar is okay, we can start to see it reflected in high blood pressure first. So that's also very, very important as far as just making sure the insulin component of it is well-maintained.
You know, once again, we're going back to exercise, diet. I mean, I know these seem so basic, but they're not basic if you're not applying them, and they're life-changing if you do. So we've just got a minute and a half to our hard break, so I just want to set up this question for when we come back. Well, we've got Susan calling in from Duluth. We'll get your call, Susan, on the other side. Her question is about Alzheimer's, but Jean also from Plymouth says, I was just diagnosed with shingles yesterday. I'm taking Valtrex, wondering if you had any recommendations for how to expedite the healing process. We will cover that as well. And one more, Renee calling in says, my husband's been struggling with gout, especially in the evenings. Do you have suggestions for this other than taking medicine? So we're going to tackle Alzheimer's, gout, and a few other things when we come back. I'm Susie Larson. This is Middays, talking to our good friend, Dr. Troy Spurl of Synapse Center for Health and Healing. And I see some more texts coming in. This is how it goes, and I love it. Keep the questions coming. Text or call 877-933-2484 or email middays@myfaithradio.com. We'll do our best to tackle every question that we can. Jeff writes in about memory loss. He said it's proven over and over again when by a study that folks who create wireless transmission through cell phones, it can cause destroy brain cells. You can comment on that one too, huh?
Sure.
Yeah. That wasn't a question. I just told him. You're going to comment on that. I'm just kidding.
I was very obedient. I said yes.
Exactly. You did. Very good. We'll be back and answering your questions in just a moment. So much for tuning in to Middays. I'm Susie Larson. Hope you're having a really great day. We sure are in studio. We've got Dr. Troy, who joins us every single month to answer your questions on the health and healing process. Phone lines are open, 877-933-2484. You can either text that number or you can call that number. And again, if you're shy about getting on the air, you can just leave your comment question with our call screener, and we'll do our best to address them. But I want to grab this live call. Susan's checking in from Duluth with a question for Dr. Troy. Hey, Susan, you're on with Dr. Troy. How are you doing today?
Oh, very well. Thank you so much for taking my call, Susie. Mm-hmm. My mother died of Alzheimer's, and she was a very unlikely candidate for getting that disease because she was very fit and active her whole life. She was a reader. She was a very good bridge player. She was a very moderate drinker and she ate a good diet. I mean, she took impeccable care of herself. And her father also had Alzheimer's. Now, my question is this disease inherited, and what are my chances of getting it, and is there anything I can do to either delay it or not get it altogether? And I will hang up and listen for your answer. Thank you.
Thank you so much. What do you say, Doc?
First of all, Susan, thank you for asking that question, because you are not alone. There's a lot of people out there with similar stories, and this is a question they have quite often. And so the first thing is, yes, there is a genetic component to it for many, not all of the people who get Alzheimer's. And so the gene testing is called the APOE4, and all that means is your risk potential increases when you have that gene from both parents. And so what you also should know that there are a lot of things you can do to help prevent the whole component of Alzheimer's coming in, even if you have the genetic predisposition. Now, if you don't have the genetic predisposition, you can still get Alzheimer's for many different reasons. What I'm going to reference here is a book called The End of Alzheimer's, and it is written by Dr. Dale Bredesen. I actually have it in studio with me today just because I'm talking about memory. It's my favorite memory book. And the title is The End of Alzheimer's, The First Program to Prevent and Reverse Cognitive Decline. In there, he talks about the 37 different triggers of Alzheimer's. And so they can range from blood sugar imbalances, like we talked about. And so it sounds like your mom did a very, very good job at managing many of the basics, but there are some other things that can sneak in there. One of the ones is mold. Mold toxicity, or secondary from Lyme, can create a condition called CIRS, chronic inflammatory response syndrome, which our traditional medical testing doesn't test for. It's specialized testing, specialized MRIs that can be done early on. And excuse me, that is one of the 37 different triggers. So there are other things that can cause the blood-brain barrier to break down. And so there's a lot of navigating through that. And generally speaking, the practitioners that really focus on prevention will look at the five categories of Alzheimer's and then break down from there the 37 different triggers to see what is your most likely trigger. And we've been working with people, with Dr. Bredesen now for the last 2 years, and we've seen some pretty miraculous turnarounds. And I have a patient that came in because every single family member was diagnosed with Alzheimer's very, very early on. And she was 50, in her 50s. And long story short, we found 9 different triggers that had already started to become bad that we were able to address at this early stage. And she has noticed a difference. She was able to pass all the memory tests right now and all the Alzheimer's tests. But what we did find that was off and corrected helped her with her overall function and just health-wise, but it was all associated with the memory, and she did have the genetic predisposition. So, and Dr. Bredesen in his book talks about a lot of the research, and he's been an Alzheimer's researcher for 30 years. So there's a lot of information there for you, and so I recommend you looking at the book. We do plan to actually do a podcast lecture here on this topic at the clinic, because a lot of people have questions about that. So there should be more information there as well. But sharing other people's testimonies and reading some of the stuff, some of the people Dr. Bredesen worked with, will really help you have some peace of mind too, that there is something you can do about it.
And that's where we kind of got the idea of plugging the holes last month when we were talking, because he really is a proponent of look at the holes and plug them. So, you know, we've said this on the show before, just because you have a genetic predisposition does not guarantee the outcome. It's just a good warning flare. You might have to work harder. Maybe you've got a predisposition toward anxiety or alcoholism. You've just got to shore up your life more. So I think I'm not saying she's doing that, but again, I hear people talk like that. Well, it runs in the family, and they're just buying it hook, line, and sinker. But we know so much now that we can really, you know, affect things by plugging the holes and establishing a course, right?
Yeah, and some of these genetics, all it means is that there's a 14% likelihood increase that you're going to get it over your neighbor because of the genetics. 14% is manageable.
Yeah.
So the biggest thing we can do is ignore it, ignore this new information, and not do anything about it. These things, memory is something you can completely preserve, And you just have to have heightened awareness about what's not working. And we live in such a time. It's amazing to me that Dr. Bredesen has uncovered and discovered all of these different triggers. We are blessed to have this information.
He was ahead of the game by a lot.
He's ahead of the game. And he writes about his story in there. He was a pre-traditional researcher. And he had done research for the U.S. government, the Canadian government, and the Australian government. And when he accidentally made his discovery, which is how he talks about it, it ended up being opposite of what they thought. He realized that just like when we have an injury in our skin and it scabs over, a lot, not all, but a lot of the plaquing in the brain of Alzheimer's is our immune system's reaction to something, just like a scab wound on the skin. So what he found was you have to identify what caused the immune system to become so reactive at that time. He found 37 different things. He didn't get his grant money to continue the research because the way it's kind of set up right now, they want one medication to fix all of Alzheimer's. And he said, that's never going to happen. We have 37 different triggers, 37 different holes to plug, 36 in the book, but we've identified one more. And so that's why we're really, it's a different avenue to go down, and it's a different way of thinking about it that fits kind of how I like to look at how the body works. And so I feel just very, very fortunate that he continued on and wrote the book and kept working at this, because he could have easily said, well, I'm going to go on to the next thing, but he didn't. Mm-hmm. And so he has given us this gift, and it fits with the functional medicine world. In fact, that's where he turned to because of his wife. He writes about that in the book. Mm-hmm. His wife, who does functional medicine, said that's more of a functional medicine model, what you're talking about.
Wow. Oh, again, this is one of those days I wish the show was 2 hours long. So I see the calls coming in, lots of texts coming in. Lord, give us wisdom on how to navigate all of these questions. We want to help you so much. Let's see, Ronnie from Wisconsin. Ronnie, you're on the air with Dr. Troy.
Yeah, Dr. Troy, I was diagnosed with a pheochromocytoma in 2003. And at the time, my adrenaline levels were 3 times what they should have been, and my cortisol levels were twice what they should have been. Of course, I'd already had a heart attack from it and a coronary spasm, and but that was like in 91. So what are the long-term effects that I can expect on my body from the field?
So with something like that, we're looking at, just managing everything around the adrenal glands. And so the adrenal glands, release the cortisol, release the adrenaline. And so you want to do as much, control over things you can control. So for example, when, we don't know what your adrenaline is right now, your cortisol is right now, but managing those, making sure the cytoma doesn't come back again. That is important, number one. We generally see those things occur because of challenges within your ability to detoxify properly. But you still want to do the basics. For example, caffeine, when taken, irritates the ability to break down the adrenaline that you are currently releasing. We also want to address things like balanced blood sugar and making sure you're detoxifying properly, because anytime you have inflammation within the body, it causes a stress response. The stress response will send a signal to your adrenal glands to release adrenaline or cortisol. So the short version is do your best to manage inflammation, especially digestive inflammation. Manage your hormones, insulin and thyroid in particular, because they are opposing hormones to the adrenal glands. And then manage your stress levels as best you can and sleep as well as you can. Keep the bowels open and moving, and that can help the adrenal function. So it's really the same as what we talk about with people who have been diagnosed with adrenal fatigue, or we now call it more of a hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis problem. But we want to continue to manage those same systems. The biggest challenge will come with menopause. Because with menopause, your ovaries stop producing the estrogen, and now that duty will go to the adrenal glands, and they're already taxed with other challenges. So menopause has to be managed very, very effectively, and supporting the adrenal glands. B5, B6 really help the adrenal glands, and B6 is the main mineral to help with deep sleep. So it tells you how important sleep is for the adrenal glands. So those are just some real quick basics. It doesn't even touch the tip of what is needed, but there's a lot of references out there as far as what to do naturally to help your adrenal glands. And there was a book called Chronic Fatigue, the 21st Century, written a few years back. Those types of books and all the books within that category can help at least give you some direction on how to support your adrenal glands so that during times of stress or hormone fluctuation changes like menopause, that they don't become overreactive.
And citrus essential oils on your adrenals is a good thing. Dr. Susie here. I'm not a doctor, but I play one on radio. Okay, we're going to try to sneak Katie's call in from Colorado Springs. We've got a break coming up, but I want to make sure we tackle this one. And Lee and Tom, I see your calls, and I see all the texts. We're doing our best. Hang in here. Katie, you're on the air with Dr. Troy.
Hi, Susie. I'm going to call you Dr. Susie.
Thank you. You've just made my day, even though Dr. I don't know anything. Susie. But keep going. Yes.
I just wanted to ask, Dr. Troy, what are the building blocks of serotonin? Just supplements I can take to raise my serotonin levels, for example, like BH4. Are there any other supplements so I don't have to go on any medication for depression? Mm. I can just take supplements.
So the BH4 is more for the genetic components. Building blocks of serotonin are basically tryptophan. Tryptophan, you need a couple things working properly. Number one, a lot of the serotonin is made in the GI tract. So any intestinal inflammation has the potential of reducing serotonin levels, number one. Number two, when you have tryptophan, and that comes from, that amino acid comes from a lot of different proteins, but you can look up the higher tryptophan foods. But the problem is if you have a hidden infection or stress in life, whether it be mental, chemical, or physical stress, it will start to convert your tryptophan into a neurotoxic form called quinolinic acid. So by removing stress, mental, chemical, or physical stressors, including digestive distress, and improving hidden infections, bacterial infections, SIBO, Marcon's, mold, SIRS, and other more classic infections, candida, yeast, fungus, by removing those, that helps serotonin levels go up quite a bit. And then again, one of the main vitamins that help convert tryptophan to serotonin is B6, the same one we just talked about for the adrenal glands. And so P5P, or as the active form of B6, is very, very good with that. Some people will take pure tryptophan, and if you take pure tryptophan, that can continue to drive that quinolinic acid pathway, which is the neurotoxic one. So we generally tell people 5-hydroxytryptophan is better because that won't get converted into the neurotoxic form, and that can help quite a bit as well. So intestinal inflammation, reducing stress and infection, and making sure your B6 and your tryptophan, 5-hydroxytryptophan levels are good. There is a lab test called the organic acid test that is wonderful from Great Plains Labs that actually tests for that, and it is my favorite because it tells us quite a bit about what's working within that system.
Very good. We're going to pause here. Katie, thanks so much for that call. Hope that was helpful for you. Got so many texts coming in. One was, how do you treat chronic Lyme disease? We'll talk a bit about that. Let's see here. Lee from Duluth. I think we will try to grab Lee's call on the other side. Dr. Troy can't diagnose over the air. He's got a pain in a specific area in his abdomen. And so maybe you can make some suggestions for him. And we'll do our best. So good to have you listening today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Middays. Dr. Troy is our guest, and we will be back in a moment. That song, never get tired of it. Thanks for tuning into Middays. I'm Susie Larson. Dr. Troy joins us in studio every month to take your questions. And we always have more questions than we do have time, but we're just trusting God will lead us through. Lee is calling from Duluth. And Lee, I see your question on the board, and because I'm not a doctor, but I pretend to be one on radio, I just have to try to diagnose first and see if I'm right, okay? Well, I think it's a functional hiatal hernia is what I think Lee's going to be asking you about.
Okay.
All right, Lee, what do you say?
I heard that term once before on the show, and I just have this strange thing that's kind of a pain, tenderness, pressure under my ribs on my left side. I've been diagnosed with Barrett's esophagus, acid reflux. They've done visceral physical therapy, which took care of it for about half an hour after every session, and then it was back and muscle tension.
So sorry.
I'm just perplexed as to where to go next.
Yeah.
Well, as much as I don't want to say it, one of the things it could be is the functional hiatal hernia. And so let me explain that just real briefly. When the stomach gets caught up on the diaphragm, it can cause a problem where the valve in the stomach goes up. That causes the Barrett's esophagus, esophagitis. Yep. And so that's one of the things. The only way to fix that in the beginning is to physically pull it down. And so some PTs and chiropractors know how to do that. And so you have to ask them, can you fix a functional hiatal hernia? So the difference between a functional and a traditional hiatal hernia is traditional requires surgery. A functional one, it just gets caught up in the diaphragm. And it can take some retraining. So sometimes we have to adjust it anywhere from 1 to 12 times. And so it is very, very effective and changes right away. The fact that you had a 30-minute change after PT is a good sign, but there's something else going on there. Now, here's another gem that sometimes with people who have zinc imbalances or histamine imbalances, it can set off a sensitive stomach. So low zinc, which one of the signs of low zinc is white spots on your fingernails, prostate problems. Those low zinc can cause a stomach to be hyperreactive, predisposing you to having more of the pain in the stomach. Hidden infection like H. pylori in the stomach is also there. And then a histamine imbalance. If you react to seasonal allergies and things like that, it can affect the timing mechanism of when your body releases the hydrochloric acid or the stomach acid. The other thing that is very helpful is melatonin at 6 milligrams has been shown to help improve the strength of the valve at the top of the stomach. So once you get the stomach pulled down, if it's a functional hiatal hernia, if it keeps coming back, you have to fix the zinc, histamine, or improve the strength of the valve by taking melatonin. But really, it's about getting deep sleep. The problem is, as we get into our 50s, 60s, and 70s, our ability to produce melatonin reduces drastically. So our stomach becomes weaker and weaker as we get older. Stress, of course, makes that worse because we get into a fight or flight versus a rest and digest state as well. And then doing stretches where you're actually extending your shoulders and your back and deep breathing can really help strengthen that valve as well, as can gargling at nighttime water.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Lee, I got to say, that was one of my many issues. And when Dr. Troy did that adjustment, honestly, I felt oxygen just flow through my body. I mean, because it was hard to get a breath. It was like this uncomfortable feeling. So can I just pray for you right now?
You bet.
Father, thank you for Lee. I thank you, God, that you are a God who heals and a God who restores. And I pray that you'd either lead him to a doctor in his community or you make a way somehow for him to find someone who can do this adjustment for him. But I pray ultimately you'd heal him and that he would live out his days in health and wholeness and you'd relieve him of this pressure and this pain. I thank you that you care about every detail of his life. And we just bless our dear brother in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thank you so much. Amen.
Yeah. Thank you, Lee, for calling. Appreciate that. So you wanted to tackle the gout question. Renee called in earlier and said her husband deals with gout specifically at night, wanted to know, is there more she can do besides meds?
Yes, absolutely. So the reason why gout is a little bit worse at nighttime is because that's when we stop moving is the most common. And gout is a buildup of uric acid, specifically in the body. But in gout, it's most commonly found in the toes. So circulation helps to prevent the pain a little bit during the day, even though when you first start, it's very painful to get walking on it. But uric acid is building up in the body. So the real problem is you have to decrease uric acid. Uric acid comes from purine-rich foods. So if you Google purine-rich foods, which is shrimp and a bunch of other foods on that list, you want to minimize those foods because they get converted into that uric acid. But what we have found, the most common problem with uric acid buildup is low stomach acid, secondary to proton pump inhibitors, or just for whatever reason, like we just talked about with the low zinc, low stomach acid causing high body acid because of fungal infection. So if there's any history of proton pump inhibitors, that is one of the inducers of low stomach acid that leads to fungus infection in the body that builds up uric acid, and it can eventually turn into gout. You can test for that in different ways other than just the uric acid as well. If your total protein is low or albumin is low on a traditional blood screen, then that can be an indication of the problem with the low stomach acid. Hmm. Tart cherry juice can actually be effective in relieving some of the discomfort, but we want to look, that actually helps clear the acids out of the body through the kidney system. So what we want to do is also minimize what set this all up. So if there is anything that shuts down the stomach acid response or that needs to be corrected, you start there, you take care of the infection because it's the yeast and the fungus that release the acids that end up being stored, causing the gout.
What does the fungus come from? Is that environmental? Is that dietary? Is that an untreated?
So when we have low stomach acid, the pH in our intestines start to change. And so it's just like the soil. If the soil is rich and good and the pH is right, then the good crops grow. If the pH is bad, like on cement, then only weeds grow. So as we have low stomach acid, it changes the pH of our intestines, the soil, and then bad stuff starts to grow. It's more of an environment for bad bacteria, yeast, and fungus to grow. We all have a fungus among us. That's my favorite thing to say. I just wanted to see.
I got to count his favorites. Basal ganglia.
Basal ganglia.
The great labs urine test, I think it was.
Yeah. And fungus among us. So we all have it in us, but it's kept at bay.
All right.
Because of good pH. So we want to keep our stomach acid high and good and normal so that the rest of the acid in the body becomes more acceptable to for the environment of the good bacteria.
Interesting. Yep. We got about 2 minutes left, and I got, again, so many questions, but this dear listener says, how do you treat chronic Lyme disease? And I don't know if you can do that in 2 minutes, but what is that?
2 minutes. Well, first of all, I'm going to say there isn't a ton of reproducible results with that, but there are a lot of success stories. So the short version is this. Right now, this is one of those scenarios, I would say, that the healthcare community, traditionally and non-traditionally, are building the plane as they're flying it, which means that we've had a lot of success stories and a lot of things that don't line up so that you can reproduce it. But chronic Lyme, it's all about restoring, first of all, the foundation of the immune system response. So the digestive system and your immune system have to be restored. We also see there's a lot of co-infections with Lyme. So a lot of different types of bacteria. We now have enough research to tell us that different antibiotics are actually beneficial for different types of Lyme, whether it be Borrelia, Babesia, whatever it is, or whatever co-infection you have. There are different binders that work, and there are different antibiotics, natural and traditional, that work better. So we're starting to delineate through that, which is
interesting.
Amazing.
Wow.
We also see co-infections like mold. And I hate to say this, but the majority of people with chronic Lyme actually have a mold issue that is going on and hasn't been addressed or treated, and because the genetics are very much the same. So we see that the real problem isn't that you've been affected. It's the problem that you can't clear the mycotoxins. And then if it starts to stay there, the biofilms start to build up, and it's your immune system that will go in and break that up. And you become depleted in the things that help break up the biofilms. And it just takes a little bit of exposure from mold or stress or these immune compromising components to keep it as a chronic condition.
It's so interesting because you say they're not reproducible, but you have success stories, which to me speaks to, it's so definitive for each person. Every person has their weaknesses, their deficits, the things that the holes they need to plug, right?
And absolutely.
Yeah, wow. Well, this has been great. And friends, I'm so sorry if we didn't get to your question. We had so many come in. One of these days, we're going to see if we can schedule some extra time and keep you on for some extra bonus material. But boy, we sure appreciate you. Thanks for tuning in today. Hope you found some encouragement here. Thank you, Dr. Troy, for your time.
Absolutely.
And we will meet you all back here next time. Thanks for listening to this Middays with Susie Larson podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link to spread the good news of the gospel and to grow the impact of Middays with Susie Larson.